And as the story unfolds, God doesn't do it quickly. He does it in bits and pieces. And as you read through the Bible, as you read through the Old Testament, into the New Testament, you see connections being made. Some of the characters in the Bible, matter of fact, we'll look at Joseph briefly this morning. Joseph's a positive character for the most part. But some of the characters are dark. And some of the chapters are dark. And this morning we are looking at the character of Judah. And Judah has a very, very dark side. Following the introduction of sin, God announced both punishment and promise. The punishment was experiencing the sin in our world and then in our lives. And God, when Adam and Eve sinned, God pronounced judgment, but he also made the promise that one day there would be a seed, a descendant of the woman who would defeat the descendant of Satan. And then God makes a specific promise to Abraham. Abraham's sort of this character that's way far away, and he's down in Ur, and God calls him, and he makes a great promise to him. About 3,000 years before Jesus, God promises Abraham that he is going to have a descendant through all the nations of the world will be blessed. Now, it's interesting because we've been studying the Gospel of Matthew. Actually, there's like one more chapter going on to the day of Pentecost, but we really finished Matthew. But this morning, we're kind of going back to the beginning of Matthew, because in the beginning of Matthew, in chapter 1, Matthew is laying out the genealogy. Where does Jesus come from? Well, the genealogy of Jesus, and he does it in beautiful sections, goes back to King David, and then it goes back to Abraham. So what Matthew is doing is he's showing you the lineage, the descendants, the family history of Jesus. Now, there's a lot of things going on these days. You can go on everybody's sort of getting caught up with, well, what's my ancestry? So you can go on Ancestry.com, and you can send in a blood sample, and they can tell you what the origin of your family is and all the nationalities that are represented, and you can do a variety of things. So people kind of want to know, what's the history of my family? And some people think, well, I thought I was primarily Irish, but I discovered that I was German and Indonesian, all kinds of interesting kinds of things. So the genealogy goes back to Abraham, and Abraham's grandson, named Jacob, was a sneaky character. He tried to steal God's blessing that was to be given to his brother by trickery and deceit. At one point, they're trying to trick his father because he's waiting for the blessing, but the father wants some special meat that he likes. And Jacob works together with his mother, and she says, you go get something and bring it back, and I'll cover it with spices so that your father won't be able to taste the difference. So Jacob goes out, finds something, comes back. And his brother Esau was hairy, so Jacob puts some hairy skin over him. And so his father says, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the skin. And then he says, how'd you find the game so quickly? How'd you find this animal? And Jacob is so sneaky, he says, oh, the Lord your God provided. See, he's lying through his teeth. He just is one of those people. He's always lying, always cheating people. And eventually God wrestles with Jacob one night, and he overpowers him, and Jacob begs for God's blessing. He did not deserve it, but God was gracious. And so you see this dark character become good. And then we go down a little bit farther, and we get to what's called the Joseph story. Now, many of you know about Joseph. You know that Joseph had this coat of many colors, and Joseph, his brothers do mean things. So Jacob's oldest son was Reuben. And it really is a, well, today we use the word dysfunctional. It's really a messed up family. And in Genesis 35, Reuben took his father's concubine and treated her like a wife. Something was nasty to do. Jacob's favorite wife, though, was Rachel. And he had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. And Joseph was his favorite son because he was the first son of his favorite wife. And Jacob spoiled him. If you know the story, you know that Joseph ends up with this multicolored robe that his father gives him, and he kind of, you know, walked around with it, let everybody know, as I'm my father's favorite, right? And it was much to the annoyance of his brothers. And he was a later son, so some of the older brothers and Jacob sometimes would send Joseph out, go see how your brothers are doing, and his brothers weren't behaving, and he'd come back and tell his father. It's kind of a tattletale, right? And then Joseph has a couple of dreams. And in one dream, the sun and the moon and the stars bow down to him, and even his father's like, what? You're thinking someday your mother and I and all of your brothers are going to bow down to you? Is that what you're saying? Right. And so his brothers were really unhappy with Joseph, and because he was kind of arrogant. And they began to plot. How can we get rid of him? They really disliked him. See, it's a bad family. It's really messed up. And so one time he goes out, and his brothers are way off raising their sheep. And Joseph comes out, and one of the brothers says, let's kill him. And the other brother said, well, no, that's not a good idea. Let's not do that. But he said, let's throw him into a pit that he won't be able to get out of. And then we're told that Reuben, who's the firstborn, went along with that idea because he was going to come back and rescue Joseph. All right? But when some traitors come by, now this is the other story. So we've seen the Joseph story, and suddenly we begin to look at the Judah story. Judah's the fourth son of Jacob, right? Judah suggested, well, hey, there's some traitors, and they're heading to Egypt. Let's sell Joseph. Does that sound like a nice deal? Let's sell Joseph to get rid of him. In other words, he's willing to sell his own brother to be rid of him. And they did it without telling Reuben. See, Reuben's thought was, put him in a pit, I'll come back and rescue him. Reuben doesn't know this, and when Reuben comes back, he said, where's Joseph? I said, oh, we sold to some traitors. And Reuben was very upset. And then what they did is, how are we going to explain this to Dad? Well, they kept Joseph's robe, that really fancy robe. And so they dipped it in some blood, and they take it back, and they said, we don't know where Joseph went, but here's his robe. And Jacob sees the blood. He doesn't know it's an animal's blood. He said, and somebody has killed Joseph, and he is brokenhearted. Now, the Joseph story is going along. Joseph is now on his way to Egypt, and all of a sudden, this is one of the things that Moses does. See, if you started in chapter 37, and then you find, okay, Joseph is on his way down to Egypt, and then all of a sudden, you get this next chapter. It's called, the heading is Judah and Tamar. So, what happens with Judah? Well, you read the introduction verses of chapter 38. Here's what we find out about Judah, chapter 38, verse 1. It happened at that time that Judah went down from his brothers. Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, took her, married her, and she bore children. Right? What has Judah done? He has left the family. God's covenant promise came to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And basically, Judah says, who cares? And he leaves the family, moves to Canaan, and marries another woman. All of these things are strictly forbidden by God. And Judah and his wife have three sons. The first son is Ur. And he was so wicked, God killed him. And there was a custom that if a woman had been married but didn't have any children and her husband dies, then the next brother could take her and treat her like a wife and raise children for his brother. All right. So the second son, Onan, was to marry Ur's widow Tamar, raise children. And Onan takes advantage of this. Now, parents, you can see I'm being very discreet in the handling of these passages. We don't need to get more detail, but you get the principle of what's happened. So Onan is taking advantage of this. He has no intent of raising children for his brother. And God put him to death as well. So Judah has these first two sons, and God strikes them dead. And so Judah's a little bit nervous. Well, if I, what he should do now is I should give Tamar to his third son, but he's a little nervous, like, if I do that, is he going to die as well? So he says to Tamar, go back and live with your father for a while, and when my third son is old enough to marry, then I'll have him marry you. And the story goes on that Judah's wife died. He still has not fulfilled his promise to Tamar. Now he's now a widower. He doesn't have a wife. And he's going to a sheep shearing festival. And this is usually a big party, and it's something unrestrained. He still has not fulfilled. So he's watched his sons die, and he still has not fulfilled his promise to Tamar. And the interesting thing is that since Judah's wife has died, Judah actually could have married. This was another part of the custom. He could have married Tamar and raised children for her. Learning, so Tamar, he has been unfaithful to his promise. So Tamar hears that he's going to the festival, right? So she poses as a streetwalker, and then he spends the night with her, treating her like a wife. Since he had no cash with him, it says he gives her his signet. Okay, well, that's the ring that bears the family seal. It's a little bit like he gave her his major credit card, and says, when I see you the next time, give me the credit card, and I'll pay you, right? But when he sends his servant to find her, the servant can't find her. Several months later, Tamar is found to be pregnant. And she's accused of immorality. And Judah is incensed. He says, bring her out. Let her be burned. And when she faces Judah, she says, the reason I'm pregnant is because of a certain man. Is this your credit card? See, he thought he was covering his tracks, and he was doing things that were completely forbidden. Here's an ugly story, and now here comes the turning point. When Judah identified, basically, his credit card, Judah says, she is more righteous than I am, since I did not give her to my son. Here's the key thing. Parents, I'm greatly indebted to Richard Pratt. One of the best professors in my whole doctoral program was Richard Pratt. He's written a book called He Gave Us Stories, and he brings these stories to life. Otherwise, we kind of read Judah and move on. He said, no, this is the conversion of Judah. She's righteous. I'm not the righteous one. I haven't fulfilled my promise. I've mistreated her, etc. He's been a rebel against God. He's failed as a father. He's failed to keep his promises. He violates God's commandments regarding marriage. And now he's ready to execute his daughter-in-law. And what happens here, see, Judah is now confessing things that God already knows about. But Judah thought they were all hidden. But Judah not only confesses his sin, Judah experiences God's grace. And his life is transformed. He never mistreats Tamar again. As he had treated her like a wife, she has twins. The first of them is named Perez. And when you go over to Matthew chapter 1, and Matthew is giving us the genealogy of Jesus, says the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was the father of Perez by Tamar. When you look at the ancestors of Jesus, Judah is one of the ancestors, and so is Tamar. And Judah becomes a different man because of this experience. He confesses his sin, and he spares Tamar from shame and punishment. And God's gracious forgiveness is seen in the sparing of the son and the role that Perez will play in redemptive history. Now we're going to learn a little bit more. So here's what happens. Here's Judah. He's a wicked guy, has wicked sons that God kills, except for one, and he's wicked in his dealings with his daughter-in-law. But he's the one who's going to fulfill the promise that was made to Abraham. Now, to understand the story, we have to go back. See, it's interesting that the story about Judah and Tamar is right next to the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Judas is unfaithful. Judah is unfaithful. Joseph is faithful. It's brilliant writing by Moses. It's character contrast. And yet it's the grace of God. Remember that we started with Judah because Joseph's on his way down to Egypt. Now we deal with Joseph in Egypt. He was out as a slave. He's given this position of responsibility in the house of a man named Potiphar. Joseph is faithful. God blesses Potiphar. But Potiphar's wife wants Joseph to treat her like his wife. And he refuses to sin against God. So she accuses him and he's thrown into jail. Now, some of you children know these stories. You know the stories about Joseph and the dreams, etc. And eventually Pharaoh has dreams and he finds out about Joseph, and Joseph comes out, interprets Pharaoh's dream, says there's going to be 7 good years and then 7 years of famine. And what you ought to do is during the good years, you need to store up grain for those bad years. And Pharaoh said, where can I find anybody as wise as you? And now Joseph goes from the pit of jail to being second in command over all of Egypt and all of its food and everything else. And so what happens is Joseph is now gone to the heights. But the famine is widespread. And the famine comes up to where Jacob and his sons are living. And so Jacob says, you're going to have to go down to Egypt to find food. So the brothers, except for Benjamin, go down to Egypt to find food. And Joseph sees them. But Joseph is now, he looks like an Egyptian. He's dressed like an Egyptian. He's dressed like a prominent ruler in Egypt. So they have no idea that this is their brother. But he recognizes them. Right? And so he gives them food. He lets them go. And actually, they've paid him. They paid for the grain. He puts their money back in their sack. But that's how much authority he has. Nobody can do anything. Joseph puts the money. Nobody runs to Pharaoh and says, Joseph, put their money back. Joseph has absolute authority. Except the only brother who didn't go down was Benjamin. And he says, if you come back, because he'd gotten the story. He got the story from them. Yeah, there's another younger brother. If you come back, you need to bring your younger brother with you. I need to meet him. And the famine worsens. And they go back to Egypt. Benjamin with. He said, I've already lost Joseph. I can't stand if I lose Benjamin as well. And Reuben says, well, tell you what. If we don't bring him back, you can kill my two sons. That's supposed to somehow encourage his father. Right? And now we see the next phase of Judah. I call it Judah's redemptive role. On their second visit, Judah offers himself as a pledge for Benjamin's safety. When they get down there, Pharaoh sees Benjamin and he wants to keep him. And at that point, Joseph invites them to dinner and basically testing his brothers. Remember, he and Benjamin are the sons of Rachel, the favored wife. And brothers have been jealous of Joseph. So Joseph is sitting at one end, because he actually wouldn't sit down at the table with them. He's sitting at one end and he's watching. So he sends 5 times as much food to Benjamin as he gives to the rest of them. He's wanting to see if they're going to get jealous. Right? And when they leave, Joseph does a sneaky thing. He puts his own special cup in Benjamin's sack. And when they leave, he sends the guards to arrest them, and they say, you stole the master's cup. No, we didn't. And they open the bag and there's the cup. And now they come back. See, and nobody goes to Pharaoh and said, he put his cup in the guy's sack and then just arrested him and brings him back. Because Joseph is testing his brothers. And he threatens to put Benjamin to death. And here's Judah. Judah steps forward and he explains, Benjamin's death would break my father's heart. It would lead to his death. Let me stay in my brother's place. Now, this is the key. See, what's the contrast? Reuben is the oldest. He's the one that should be defending everybody. He should have been the leader. But and is brought back. And over the years, what happens? Well, Reuben is the formal firstborn, his role fades, and Judah becomes the firstborn in reality. And when Judah offers himself in place of Benjamin, see, there's a legitimate crime. Benjamin could be taken, could be killed because, quote unquote, he stole Joseph's cup. But Joseph offers to step in. Let me take my brother's place. Joseph is offering himself as a substitute. It is a picture of redemption. And at that point, Joseph now knows that his brothers have repented from their earlier action, reveals himself, and then the whole family moves down to Egypt. But from this point forward, Judah's tribe has a special role in Israel. We were saying that. By the way, there are 789 references to Judah. I'm thankful when I use Bible Works, it tells me how many there are. To Judah in a variety of ways. So he's sung of Judah's daughters, sing. Sometimes we talk, the Psalms will speak about Israel, but every once in a while, remember, Israel's name, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. Every once in a while it refers to the Israelites as Jacob's children. Why? Don't ever forget where he came from. See, when the Israelites later on read about Judah, they're going to go, a really messed up family. Not really dark, but look what God has done. And when he offers himself in place of Benjamin, he is a forerunner of Jesus. What tribe does Jesus come from? Not from Reuben, the firstborn, but from Judah, the fourthborn. And Judah has pictured for us what redemption is like. He's the ancestor that is mentioned from Reuben, but from Judah. So what's here? Well, first, sin has serious consequences, often unexpected consequences. Judah's sons, Judah's sons reflect the religious training of their father. He leaves Jacob, goes off into Canaan, and his sons are so wicked, God just strikes them dead. And we need to understand, sin has serious consequences. They're wicked. God punishes them. Judah tries to cover his sin, but God reveals it, and then God forgives it. So sin has serious consequences. You sort of say, oh, it doesn't matter. Go ahead and do whatever you want. No. Has serious consequences. The second thing, though, is that God is gracious. There is no sin that is beyond God's grace. And the whole fascinating history as we go through the Old Testament and on into the New, the disciples, etc., God seems to delight in picking unlikely people and then transforming them for his own glory and for service in the kingdom. God is gracious. The first part of Judah's life is selfish. And in a sense, after his confession, recognizing that he doesn't have the righteousness that he needs, his life has turned to serving others. There's also another piece that's really important that we could slip by if we're not careful. God seems to have a special place in the history of redemption for women who have suffered mistreatment. The Bible is full of mistreated women. They're in the genealogy of Jesus. Tamar is mentioned. Rahab is mentioned. Bathsheba is mentioned. And even Mary has lots of questions raised about her purity. The whole point of this is not to take sin lightly, but say, wow. Because Tamar's kind of dealing a little dishonestly with Judah. But God forgives that. Bathsheba was a woman of the streets. I'm sorry, Rahab is the woman of the street. Bathsheba is the one who is unfaithful with David. And there's accusations made about Mary. So not take sin lightly, but to demonstrate God's grace and God overruling what's taking place. And then we need to make the connection between Judah and Jesus. The reason there is forgiveness for Judah and Tamar and Bathsheba and Jacob and the rest of us is that Judah's descendant Jesus paid the price for redemption on the cross. As Judah offers to take Benjamin's place, so Jesus took Judah's place in all of our places on the cross. And it's interesting to see how the New Testament ends. When you get to the book of Revelation, and all kinds of things are going on, and there's a cry, who's going to be the deliverer? And in Revelation chapter 5, verse 4. One of the elders said to me, "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals. And between the Lamb and the four living creatures and among the elders, I saw a Lamb standing as though it had been slain, with seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God in all the earth. And he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures, the 24 elders, fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song. Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe, nation, people, and language, and you have made them a kingdom of God and priests to our God." Who is Jesus? The Lion of the tribe of Judah, who was slain again. And the book of Revelation, the last book, celebrates the triumph of Jesus, the Lion of Judah. Now, if we're honest, we've done all of the things that Judah or Jib or others may have done, but we're still sinners. How can there be hope? How can there be an offer? Can God overrule and undo what we've done? He can, because He's made a promise. And He's accomplished that promise in the person of Jesus. And so when you think about Judah, and you think about Judah and Jesus, and you hear that heavenly host saying, "Worthy are you to take the scroll and open its seals," is that your response to Jesus? You recognize your need, but you recognize no matter how bad the guilt is, Jesus covers all of it. And He calls us to experience His grace, to worship and serve Him. Let's pray. Father, sometimes as we look at the lives of the characters in the Old and New Testament, we wonder why you would have anything to do with them. We see Judas wandering away and forsaking the faith and producing children that, because of their sinfulness, you destroy. We see him as a person who doesn't keep his word, a person who mistreats others. And yet, you reveal to him his own sinfulness and his own need, that he can recognize that Tamar is righteous and he is not. And then you use him. His name stands out throughout the Old Testament, all the times that Israel is referred to as the sons of Judah. That Jesus comes from the tribe of Judah. So we thank you for your marvelous grace. Remind us whether our sin measures up to the same level. Our sin still measures up. And you offer us forgiveness and new standing and new life in Jesus. So draw us to Jesus. Help us to grow in our love for Him, our response to Him, our worship and our service. We pray in His name. Amen.